Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. We will conduct a question-and-answer session during the conference. To request to ask a question, you may press star one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn today's meeting over to your host, Mr. Jesse Lauder. You may begin.
Hi, everybody. This is Jesse Lauder from the Department of Labor. I'm here with Assistant Secretary for MSHA Joe Main and George Fesak and Bill Frankhart from the Internal Review Team. Joe's going to talk for a minute. George is going to talk for a bit, and then we'll open it up for questions afterwards. With that, I'll turn it over to Assistant Secretary Main.
Thank you, Jesse. And good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining us today. Today, George Fesak, Bill Frankhart, leaders of the Internal Review Team, will present the findings of the team's review into the actions of MSHA's personnel in the months and weeks leading up to the catastrophic explosion at Upper Big Branch. The report and documents related to the accident investigation and internal review were posted at about 11:30 this morning, so everyone should have access to those. UBB was the worst coal mine explosion, in 40 years, killing 29 good men and injuring two. I insisted that the internal review team carry out a thorough review of MSHA's activities. The report detailing the team's findings is the most comprehensive and detailed internal review report that I think that I've ever seen. While the internal review report found that MSHA District 4 had one of the toughest enforcement records of all MSHA districts, it, however, shows that MSHA could have done a better job at UBB in a number of areas. George and Bill will describe them in more detail. We've already made significant changes to the way that we do business to apply the lessons learned from the tragedy. We will be working to implement additional recommendations of the internal review team and make organizational and other changes necessary in our effort to keep miners safe and healthy. And we, internal review follows the release of our accident investigation report, which found that Massey Energy engaged in practices such as advance notice, intimidations of miners, not report safety concerns, keeping two sets of books, and hiding injuries, all of which severely impeded MSHA from discovering the true conditions at the mine. Still, MSHA inspectors issued more 104D closure orders at UBB in 2009 than any other mine in the country. Before George and Bill take you through the findings of the report and answer any questions that you may have about the report, let me introduce them to you. George Fesak, the team leader, has been with MSHA for 40 years, and this is the 10th internal review that he's led. Bill, the technical team leader, is a mining engineer in MSHA's technical support office in Pittsburgh and has been with the agency for over 30 years. And with that, I'm going to turn the meeting over to you, George.
Good afternoon. I'm George Fesak, and I'm here to report on the findings of the MSHA Internal Review Team. The Internal Review Team's mission was to evaluate MSHA's performance at UBB and to recommend corrective actions to improve MSHA's enforcement capability and further mine safety and health. This internal review was the most in-depth internal review I have ever led. We did this because we wanted to identify the root causes of MSHA's deficiencies so that the agency can develop corrective actions that will produce meaningful change. I'm going to talk about the following topics. Significant shortcomings the internal review team identified, an overview of District 4's enforcement performance, root causes for the deficiencies we found, corrective actions MSHA has already taken, and the review team's recommendations. The internal review team identified a number of significant shortcomings with the manner in which MSHA enforced the Mine Act at UBB in the 18 months before the explosion. These shortcomings involved the following: coal dust accumulations and rock dusting, operator examinations, tailgate roof support, miner training, areas not inspected, level of enforcement, the roof control plan, the February 2004 methane inundation, and respirable dust. Some of these shortcomings were related to contributory violations cited by the accident investigation team. The MSHA accident investigation team concluded that float coal dust and coal dust in the longwall tailgate propagated the explosion. Inspectors who were in the tailgate 3 weeks before the explosion stated that they did not recognize accumulations of coal dust and float coal dust during their inspection. District 4 personnel did not sample the mine dust in the old number 2 section. MSHA policy did not require inspectors to take spot rock dust samples in other older areas of the mine unless they believed a violation existed. Inspectors did not collect spot samples in these areas, and some of these older areas contained coal dust which was involved in the explosion. In terms of operator examinations, inspectors did not fully understand the purpose of their reviews of the operator's examination record books. District 4 inspectors did not use examination records to identify noncompliance along the UBB belts. They did not effectively use examination records to determine the operator's negligence, and they did not determine that air readings were not recorded for some required evaluation points. Tailgate roof support. Inspectors did not identify the deficiency in the supplemental roof support installed in the longwall tailgate travelway. Miner training. Inspectors did not identify that several Massey miners and contractors were inadequately trained. I'm going to talk a little bit about other contributory violations. This is not a shortcoming, but it's other contributory violations supported cited by the accident investigation team. Other violations were identified by the MSHA accident investigation team as contributing to the disaster on April 5th. The internal review team determined that District 4 inspectors did not have an opportunity to observe these violations. Air current in the longwall tailgate on April 5th was not sufficient to dilute, render harmless, and carry away methane. The methane detector used during the examination on the longwall was turned off. Water sprays were removed from the shear tail drum, and worn bits on the tail drum were not replaced. Based on inspector interviews and a review of their inspection reports, the internal review team is confident that District 4 inspectors would have cited these violations if they had observed them. In terms of areas and not inspected, inspectors missed areas of the mine during every inspection, but over time they improved. They missed miles of air courses during the first inspection and less than 3,000 feet during the last inspection before the explosion. During the last inspection, inspectors missed the old number 2 section and the belt and return entries of tailgate number 22, which had been developed about 800 feet. Level of enforcement. Inspectors significantly elevated enforcement in the 18 months before the explosion, but the level of enforcement could have been higher. Inspectors did not identify 8 potentially flagrant violations for further review, and District 4 did not pursue 6 special investigations against Massey management personnel due to insufficient resources. The roof control plan. The Massey roof control plan did not provide for needed pillar stability for the longwall headgate entries. MSHA did not require Massey to provide pillar stability calculations and approved Massey's plan without them. Inspectors, not roof control specialists, conducted 6-month plan reviews at UBB. I want to talk a little bit about the February 2004 methane inundation. District 4 requested assistance from MSHA Technical Support following the February 18, 2004 methane floor outburst at UBB. Technical Support investigated the incident and wrote a memorandum to District 4 regarding their findings. At that time, the operator was planning to drill degasification wells. On May 26, 2004, MSHA met with the operator at their request to discuss the locations of the degasification wells. This meeting was attended by the Performance Coal Company Senior Mining Engineer. A second technical support memorandum documented the meeting. The internal review team could not determine if the operator got copies of either memorandum. However, Massey was told in the May 26 meeting that degasification was problematic and it would be best to increase air quantity on the longwall and in the bleeder system. Massey did not upgrade their ventilation plan, and District 4 did not encourage or require an upgrade to the plan. The technical support memorandums were not filed in the District 4 technical files for future reference and were not readily available when the September 2009 ventilation plan was approved. Respirable dust. Massey exploited a loophole in MSHA procedures to avoid complying with reduced respirable dust concentration standards due to quartz, putting miners' health at risk. The shortcomings we found were not due to indifference or disregard for duty. The internal review team determined that inspectors worked conscientiously under difficult conditions in an effort to enforce the Mine Act at UBB. Even with all of the issues we identified, it is important to put District 4's performance in perspective. During the 18 months before the explosion, District 4 inspectors cited 684 violations requiring abatement of numerous hazards. MSHA proposed $1.3 million in penalties for these violations. In 2009 alone, District 4 inspectors cited 42 unwarrantable failure violations at UBB, more than any other mine in the nation. Let me clarify that. That was in fiscal year 2009. District 4 performed similarly at other mines. 38% of the unwarrantable failure violations in the nation were issued in District 4. District 4 had the highest violations per inspection hour, highest S&S violations per inspection hour, highest unwarrantable failure violations per inspection hour in the nation. But it wasn't enough at UBB. The internal review team concluded that shortcomings were due to several factors, which were exacerbated by Massey actions to cover up hazards, injuries, and accidents. First, there were not enough inspectors and specialists, and nearly all resources were dedicated to completing mandatory inspections required by the Mine Act. Agency resources were depleted before the 2006 disasters at Sago, Aracoma, and Darby. Fewer inspectors, fewer specialists, and the remaining specialists were making inspections and were not always available to help inspectors on technical issues. Inspector inexperience. Congress provided supplemental funding in 2006, resulting in a hiring surge in 2006 and 2007. But it takes at least 2 years to make a journeyman inspector. This was evident at UBB. All but one lead inspector was hired after the 2006 disasters. The least experienced inspector at UBB had 13 months experience and had not finished academy training. We found deficiencies with MSHA's directives system. This is a system of providing written instructions to employees. There are too many directives and for inspectors and specialists to understand and follow. There are 14 handbooks and over 4,500 pages of directives. This is three times the size of the Bible. Sometimes formal directives were replaced by informal instructions by email or memos, and some directives were not distributed to everyone who needed them. Management turnover was a factor. There were four acting district managers during 2003 and 2004. This is the period of time that both inundations occurred and District 4 did not make an appropriate response to the technical support report. Supervisory oversight. Inexperienced inspectors need close supervision, and supervision was not adequate. There were two acting supervisors for the work group responsible for UBB during the last quarter of 2009. Inspector overload. Inspectors do not have enough support from specialists. There are too many directives for them to know and follow. and new regulations and findings from other internal reviews have added to the burden on inspectors. MSHA has already taken important steps to deal with some of the issues we identified. MSHA promulgated a new rock dust standard and issued enforcement guidance on rock dusting longwall tailgates. MSHA conducted focused training for District 4 and District 12 inspectors on rock dust sampling and examination requirements. The agency is upgrading the Mount Hope Air and Dust Lab to reduce the time required to analyze samples. MSHA split District 4 into two districts. When fully staffed, this will increase the number of MSHA specialists in southern West Virginia. The agency developed a flagrant violation tool for inspector laptop computers that will alert inspectors when they issue a potentially flagrant violation. The agency increased supervisor inspector training. The assistant secretary reinstituted continuing education requirements for all inspectors, specialists, and supervisors. Coal metal supervisor were trained in 2010, and supervisor training will be, additional supervisor training will be provided after this internal review report. MSHA revamped the pattern of violation program, and in April 2010, MSHA initiated impact inspections to deal with mines with poor compliance histories or particular compliance concerns. Even with these actions, the internal review team believes more must be done, including revamp the directive system to provide clearer, more concise instructions to enforcement personnel. There needs to be better training for MSHA's enforcement personnel, including supervisor. We need to make better use of specialists to provide needed technical assistance to inspectors, and better use of technology to reduce the administrative burden on inspectors. We need to define the salient parts of a regular inspection, and together the internal review and accident investigation teams also recommended regulatory changes to better protect the safety and health of miners. The internal review team's hope is that the corrective actions already implemented and the corrective actions we recommend will improve MSHA's capability to effectively administer the Mine Act. This is what drove the internal review team through the many months of its work, and is our hope that improvements to mine safety and health resulting from this internal review will in some way honor those who died so tragically on April 5th, 2010. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to open it up for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. You'll be prompted to record your name. Please make sure your phone is not muted and record your name slowly and clearly when prompted. To withdraw your request, you may press star 2. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1 now. Our first question comes from Ken Ward. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking our questions. The independent team that was headed by David McAteer concluded that the disaster at Upper Big Branch was proof positive that MSHA failed its duty as the watchdog for coal miners. Joe, after reading the internal review, do you agree that MSHA failed its duty as the watchdog for coal miners?
Thank you, Ken. Yeah, I think that if you look at the internal review, it is an assessment of the actions that MSHA has taken, or MSHA had taken prior to the Upper Big Branch tragedy. And I just want to, before I get to your full answer, Ken, just throw in a couple other components here. If you look at the internal review report, I think it's probably one of the most in-depth reports that's ever been prepared by an internal review team, and there's some reasons for that. It gets into, much more issues that have caused a number of the problems that have been identified. And not only this, but past internal reviews, and the internal review team has a section on that. They went in deeper to get to the root cause of these problems to better fix them. And I think that the internal review team, as I believe, we really need to find a root cause of all of these problems that have been persistent over the years to fix them. So this is going to be a little different than past internal reviews. With regard to the findings in that report, I don't think there's any question that MSHA could have done better. I don't think there's any question that we surely plan to do better, Ken. And I think at the end of the day, we hold ourselves accountable for the findings in that report and are responsible to see that the corrections are made.
Our next question comes from Ellen Smith. Your line is open.
Thank you. A lot of the findings, or some of the findings in this report, are similar to what was found in the Aracoma report. And I'm thinking specifically that the inspectors lacked the technical support backup to evaluate and address the complex health and safety conditions in UBB. And that was also noted in the Aracoma report, and it was somewhat noted in the Crandall Canyon report. And I know that George was on Aracoma. So the first question is, I mean, it was suggested that that changes be made after Aracoma, where these inspectors get more technical help, but you're saying that in this report you're finding these same failings. So that's the first one. And then the other one is you talk about flagrant violations. There's a case before the Review Commission right now because MSHA's not proposed a rule for flagrant violations, so I'd like to know if you plan on proposing a rule for flagrant violations.
Thank you, Alan. I would like you said, I led the Aracoma internal review team, and I believe, if I recall the report correctly, in 2004, the district manager started converting specialists to regular inspectors in the field office. And this was done in response to resource shortages and the need to complete all the required inspections, the inspections required by the Mine Act. And we noted, you're exactly right, we noted that as a weakness in the Aracoma report. Unfortunately, we found that the resource situation did not improve, and they continued to leave those specialists in the field office making regular inspections. And then to make matters worse, some of the specialists in the district office had to be reassigned part-time to make regular inspections. And this was basically the result of the reduced resources that from 2004 even continued to decline more. And the pattern of violation, maybe Joe wants to talk to that, but I do know that we have a pattern of violation rule in process at the moment.
It's flagrant violation, but so what's going to change so inspectors get more help with some of these technical issues? Are you going to hire more technical people?
Yeah, Ellen, I can pick up on that. Actually, on the flagrant issue, that's just beginning to be litigated in the before the commission. We expect to see some other cases processed through there. On the flagrants, there's actions that have been taken already to get flagrants more identified by the inspectors. And actually, George's shop and peer created a pop-up tool that now has this information popping up on the inspector's laptop. So there'll be noticed about the particular violations that may be flagrant. And we also, I think you may have saw recently, I just reorganized the Office of Assessments to create an umbrella over a number of programs that needed, organizational management and oversight. That included the flagrant program, the pattern of violation program, the impact inspection program. And we also house the office accountability in there because we think that we can do a better job in terms of our auditing with better oversight. The short answer back on the flagrants is simply we intend to see more litigation on this issue as time goes forward.
And our next question comes from Catherine Snyder. Your line is open.
Hi, Joe. I wrote down quickly this quotation. I believe George it was who said that the deficiencies found in the internal review were, quote, not due, the deficiencies in MSHA's performance were, quote, not due to indifference or disregard for duty. And I wonder if you can confirm, does this mean there have been no disciplinary actions as a result of the internal review, or have there been any? Obviously, I'm not asking for specific names and that kind of thing, which is private, but can you tell me that?
Kathy, I probably better want to answer that. George's report dealt with the performance of the agency and didn't deal with disciplinary actions. Having freshly received a report, the report is being reviewed to determine whether or not any such actions are merited based on the findings of the report, and that's something that will be acted on going forward. And with regard to the way the system works, these would be by federal rules, federal processes and procedures as well.
Okay.
The next question comes from Howard Burks. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. Mr. Burks, your line is open.
Thank you. Why weren't there enough resources available?
There was just a declining budget in the 2000s that as the budget was reduced, we were able to fund fewer inspectors.
Why was the budget reduced? Who did that, and why did it happen? And what has happened since to make sure that it's sufficient?
I'm not a political person, but I believe that the Congress, the administration proposed and the Congress approved smaller and smaller budgets during that period of time. And like I said, I believe in my speech, in 2006, Congress passed an emergency appropriations bill, which has been added to our budget, that enabled us to go a long way toward getting well. I mean, I think it allowed us to hire about 170 inspectors nationwide and 37 in District 4, which is almost a 40% increase.
Howard, if I could maybe just add a couple things to that. If you look at the report, I think there's a section that the internal review has crafted that really walks through that. And if you look at the report as it's styled, you know, during the inspection period prior to the explosion, as the agency was trying to ramp up with the new resources added, there was still a lag time. You had a lot of journeymen that was coming on that took a couple years to get ready for, get their inspection cards. And if you go back and look at that period, I think the report reflects that there was a inability of the agency to even do its mandatory inspections at the time. So they were pulling off specialists to just go in and do the inspections, which added to the dilemma, but it's an obligation that the agency had to do its mandatory inspections. So I think the report is very reflective of a lot of the things that you've raised a question about, in that there was not only a shortage, but as more folks retired and as they were attempting to be hired up, the agency was short of personnel, experienced personnel, to get the job done.
The next question comes from Aaron Cheslock. Your line is open.
First part of the question, does this end the investigation to the UBB disaster? If not, what's next? And what can the families of the fallen miners take from this report? Does it give them any closure at all? And if so, how?
And this is Joe, and I'll take the first part of the question. On December the 6th, we issued, I think it was a very thorough investigation report on the cause of the accidents, which found that Massey Energy had engaged in practices of advance notice, of intimidating miners, of keeping two sets of books, of not reporting injuries, that kept this information from agency inspectors as well as even state inspectors, that was not available. That investigation has concluded. This is the second phase, which is the internal review that looks separately at just the agency's activities leading up to the disaster. This brings the conclusion, that investigation. As all probably remember, we made a commitment at the outset to work cooperatively with the Department of Justice, and the Department of Justice, I think by their own announcements, have not concluded their activity and will be providing that cooperation going forward. And in terms of the families, we had a family meeting this morning where George and Bill presented the findings. We had a discussion. I think it's very understandable that the number of these families, closure is very difficult. This has been a very tragic experience that that our investigation findings said that should never have happened. We provided the information that we are providing to you now in terms of the agency internal review that our internal review team put together.
The next question comes from Gail Sinkugrani. Your line is open.
Hi, my question has been answered, so I withdraw. Thank you.
Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. Our next question comes from Ken Ward. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. Speaking of the Department of Justice, the report outlines how, though the agency reported that UBB had received complete inspections during the quarters preceding the explosion, that in fact the mine had not been inspected in its entirety during those periods. Could you tell us, did the inspectors in question here, did they sign any documents indicating that they had completed these inspections? And if so, are they going to be referred to the Department of Justice for potential criminal prosecution?
Well, I can't answer the last part of your question. That goes beyond the scope of what we did. The inspectors don't actually certify. The supervisor certifies after reviewing the inspection report that he believes the inspection was complete. I hope that answered the first part of your question. And the second part, we've completed this internal review. It's being reviewed by people higher than me, and what they do with it, I don't have any influence on.
And Ken, I'll just close by saying that, as you know, we're fully cooperating with the U.S. Department of Justice and any information that we have. We are making that available to the Department of Justice.
And the next question comes from Jim Sharp. Your line is open.
Thanks for doing this. I hope you'll indulge me. I have a couple of questions. The first one is, I just got as far as the executive summary, not any farther, and I couldn't see from the executive summary that this report covered events that occurred immediately after the explosion, that is to say, what went on in the command center. Does it include that? If it does not, why not?
There is a section on rescue and recovery operations that occurred after the explosion.
Oh, there is. Okay, great. Second question, your investigative report cites Massey for its failure to properly train its examiners, its foremen, and its miners. Again, I only looked at the executive summary, not any further, but I didn't see anything in there that indicates why MSHA would have missed something like that, something as obvious as that, since it should have been documented.
It should have been documented. I'm sorry, George. I'll answer the first part, but it is in the records, but it's a very difficult thing to determine. We, in the accident investigation, had a very experienced person do this evaluation of the training records over a long period of time. For an inspector to go in and cross-reference records and whether or not the trainers were certified under MSHA certifications is a very difficult thing for an inspector to do. So that some of those deficiencies would be very difficult for an inspector to cite. Go ahead, George. You have something to add?
Well, I was just going to say what you said, Bill. It took the education training specialists over 6 months to identify all those violations. I mean, could we have done better? I'm sure we could. We did cite 4 training violations in the 18 months before the explosion. But, I mean, to cross-match which instructors were certified or qualified to teach certain classes with the students, it's a time-consuming process.
All right. Third question is, why the 18-month look back? I mean, I think, George, you, in your internal review policy statement that you drafted many, many years ago, you indicated a year look back generally, but you also indicated it could be more or it could be less. Why 18 months?
Yeah, you're exactly right. The policy requires 1 year. Several years ago, we decided to take the current year plus the prior year. And in this case, we got so close to 18 months, we just took 18 months to get a full fiscal quarter. There was really nothing in particular that we were interested in looking in at. We did go back significantly farther to look at the directives issues. Some of those actually were back in the 1990s, 1980s. And we did look at the inundations in 2003 and 2004. But in terms of the fundamental part of the review, it just worked out that way that we went back 18 months.
Okay. Another question then. I guess Representative Klein has expressed some concern that Jack Kuzar left as head of the Internal Review Team in September of 2011, he retired. And Representative Klein has asked for some documentations and so forth concerning that. What's the status of that request, and what is your conclusion or comment concerning the fact that Mr. Kuzar retired basically in the middle of this investigation?
I can answer the second part of your question. Jack, I asked Jack to be on the team, and he agreed, not knowing how long it would take, I believe. And he actually intended to retire May 1st, and I asked him to extend his time on the team. Jack was just getting worn out. He was making a 460-mile each-way drive from Wilkes-Barre to Beckley, West Virginia, and he came to me and just said, it's time. It's time for me to go. I asked him several times to stay on, and he actually told us, the team, that he really felt we could take it home without him being involved. But
who replaced him?
The question. There was no dissension on the team. We had discussions about stuff, but if you know Jack, he's never shied from discussions.
Who replaced him, George?
Bill Frankart.
Okay.
Bill's here with me.
Sorry, Bill. Okay. Fourth question. Next question.
Sorry, Jim. We really need to move on to some other folks.
All right.
Our next question comes from Chris Tognieri. Your line is open.
Hi. It states the report states that during the inspections there were sections of the mine that were missed by investigators. Now I understand that UBB is a very large mine, but I'm trying to figure out. Is that normal when investigators come to a mine? Are they expected to look over at least every part of the active mining operations?
They are expected and required by policy to inspect all active workings, all places where miners work or travel.
One of the sections that was missed was the old number 2 section. You'll see a map in the beginning of the report that will identify that section for you.
Mm-hmm.
The inspector that was responsible at that time told us that he was trying to get onto that section during a day where they were running coal. And when he would show up and they didn't run coal, he wouldn't inspect that area. And by the time he did get an opportunity to inspect, they were pulled out of that area. So he did not inspect that area while it was operating.
And during the last inspection, did they inspect the area where investigators believe the explosion originated?
They did inspect the tailgate on the month prior to the explosion. They were there on the March 9th, 10th, and 11th. And according to our interviews, they missed a couple of things. One was the roof support in the tailgate. They did not identify that the roof support did not meet the requirements of the roof control plan.
Okay, and final quick question. It also says in here that inspectors did not always review the mine's examination record books, and says, quote, despite hundreds of entries documenting the amount of time hazards existed without corrective actions. I'm assuming that that's not normal either. Wouldn't that be one of the first things inspectors would do, would be to examine the books?
That is the first thing an inspector will do when he comes on property, is to inspect the books where he'll be traveling that day. So if he's going to the Longwall, he'll inspect the Longwall books. He wouldn't necessarily inspect the belt books that day. And the belt books are where most of those hazards were contained. So it wouldn't be directly obvious unless you actually were going to inspect those belts.
And our next question comes from Catherine Snyder. Your line is open.
Hi again, and thanks. I did skim the section concerning the rescue and recovery operation, and just from reading over that quickly, it sounds to me as though the concerns of some rescue team members were vindicated, who had been saying earlier that protocols weren't followed and things were being done in some cases during that rescue and recovery effort that were unsafe. The report says on page 170, the internal review team believes some command center decisions deviated from established mine rescue protocol and exposed mine rescuers to unnecessary risks. And I wonder if you could say something about the vindication of those concerns, and particularly about what the cure is for the apparent disarray or unawareness of top managers about how to run a mine rescue effort?
You know, we're looking back and being armchair quarterbacks in this case. At the time of the rescue recovery operation, especially in Gila Battle during the rescue operation, we're looking for victims. We believe that the people in the command center were making the decisions based on the best information available. As far as the recovery of the victims go, we do have some concerns there because we had not fully explored and fully reventilated that coal mine and had a number of people underground with the potential for another event to occur. With the potential there, we believe that we may have broken some protocols there, yes.
And the next question comes from Ellen Smith. Your line is open.
I'd like to know what permanent changes you see, and not so much as to prevent some actions on MSHA, but with this kind of disaster, and I'm thinking in particular with the impact inspections. And do you see MSHA using more resources, or will you try to put a policy in place so that you have more impact inspections to prevent another UBB?
Ellen, this is Joe. I think that we have constantly evaluated the effectiveness of the impact inspection program. The very first one I launched, actually Kevin Strickland launched right after the UBB disaster, and I'd asked Kevin to just take a hard look, make sure we did not have any more upper big branches out there. And from that point forward, plus other conditions we were finding, we developed a policy that's much wider than what we looked at in April 2010 for the application of impact inspections. And some of the things we're looking at is mines where we believe advance notices being given, where we're getting complaints from miners that have high accident rates, mines that have troubling ventilation problems, roof control problems. There's a variety of things that we now look at. And I have made that stationary while I'm here at MSHA as part of what we're going to constantly do. I just recently reorganized the Office of Assessments that now has an umbrella of oversight over all these programs. And I'm talking about impact inspection, the pattern of violations, the flagrant inspection program, and also we've moved in the Office of Accountability to get better oversight and management of those to hopefully keep them in place for some time to come. As we move forward, we're looking at how well these programs work, including the pattern of violations program, which I think is essential to the oversight and action on mines that get out of control, as the impact inspection program is. We've done a lot of other things, too, that's going to complement those. I think you're recognized in the report. We're in the process of reorganizing our policy directive systems that the internal review found to be defective. There was a process that was in place that was a centralized process up to through 2002 that was changed. You'll see a lot of issues raised about conflicting policies, not everybody getting policies, and in a policy process that needs to be corrected. That's going to help. One of the other things that we're doing, too, this is not a response to a normal internal review. This is a response to a review that has identified numerous problems that have been found in other internal reviews. The team did, a very good job of thoroughly looking back through time, trying to figure out what the root causes of those were, finding conditions that were showing up in past internal reviews, and really avoiding a response to these that has been undertaken in the past, and that is just to add more policies on to an overloaded policy system. I instructed in July of 2010 a complete rewrite of the inspector's handbook. What's happening is we've completed phase one, pulled all of these policies and procedures together in a single document. It is being redefined to include findings of past accountability reviews and internal reviews. It's to provide clarity where there is confusion that you'll see, I think, when you read this report about what the policies and procedures are, and to have one concise document that the inspectors can go to as opposed to several books in the trunk of their car to try to figure out what the policies and procedures are. Those, we think, are going to help going forward to better focus inspectors, to get better quality inspections, to make sure that we're more adequately inspecting mines when we get there. So I know this is a little bit long-winded, but there's a lot of reforms that we're looking at here to implement to really provide some real fixes to problems that's been identified for years.
And our next question comes from Brad Cobfeld. Your line is open.
Thank you. This question is for Joe. Actually, I have two questions. The first one is, given that the report focuses in great part on a lack of resources, and specifically personnel resources, do you currently have the personnel resources that you need to fulfill the agency's mission? And if not, are those resources requested in the current budget proposal?
I'm going to start the question, or the answer to the question this way. We just recently received the full report of the internal review, and I can guarantee everybody we're taking a hard look at all the pieces of this. You'll find our responses to recommendations and timelines we've committed to get those done, but we're also looking at this resource issue. I do know that we're in better shape today than we were in 2009 and 2010. That what was happening in 2009 and 2010 was the agency coming out of this deficient staffing with, at the same time, a lot of inspectors and supervisors and technical folks retiring, that was adding to the dilemma that left the agency in a very vulnerable spot as the review period was being, or the period it was being reviewed here. There was a lot of experience that was just lost from this agency. Every day we're moving forward to ramp that up. Every day we've been moving forward to help provide additional support in our specialist area. One of the things that we've done is we split District 4 in half and gave it a new district and a new management team, a new set of specialists, for one thing, to help shore up, you know, some of the shortcomings that was identified in the internal review. And the final answer, even with all the changes we've made and the better spot that we're in right now, we are assessing our needs to determine where areas are that we still need to shore up based on this report, other specialists and support areas.
And the next question comes from Dennis O'Dell. Your line is open.
Hey, thanks. Hey, Joe. We haven't had a chance to digest the report and read through it. We did look at some of the executive summary, and we're starting to go through the report. It looks pretty pretty massive. It looks like there's a lot of information there. But one of the things that stuck out was there was a statement in there that said Massey Energy engineers failed to develop sound mining plans, and they basically relied on the MSHA District 4 folks to correct the deficiencies that they submitted. And you know, you stated in the report that while the district specialists identified numerous deficiencies, there were a number of deficiencies that still existed. And my question, I guess, is, was this going to cause the agency to relook at making sure more qualified engineers are used to draw up these plans on the criteria and qualifications so that these designs that are submitted don't don't have to be written by the agency, because the agency should be in a position of either approving or rejecting the plans, not helping the company write them.
There are three pieces to this question. I think there was maybe three connected. One is with regard to the engineering staff that the mine operators had that they utilized for the plan review process. I think the investigation findings, yours as well as others, found deficiencies in the quality of the engineering that was there. And that's something that needs to be dealt with. Secondly, with regard to regulatory activity, and your question may have touched a bit on that, there was recommendations made by both the internal review team and the action investigation team on regulatory actions that we could consider. And we're going to be considering those. And some of them have to deal directly with ventilation of mines and approval of mining plans. The third is our engineering staff and support staff. And this is something that we are taking a deeper look at to make sure that we have the engineering support staff within our districts to support the activities. And as I've noted, in southern West Virginia, where the review took place, we have already taken actions to create a second district there with a second set of management structure and additional support of technical specialists. But that's something that we're taking a look at. And hopefully I answered the question you raised in all three of those.
And our last question comes from Chris Meyer. Your line is open.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for taking my question. I kind of have a basic question. Do you think that MSHA could have prevented this accident from occurring?
Yeah, I think, Chris, I'm going to start here. I think the report that you have identifies the shortcomings of the agency. I think that there is a central part here that is ingrained in another report, which was the practices it was engaged into by a mining company. And if you look at the central theme of that, they engaged in practices to provide advance notice, to hide conditions, to keep injuries and actions to be reported, and involved intimidation of the miners to the point that it was designed to prevent MSHA from finding conditions. I can tell you this, and I think this is reflected by the internal team, and I'm going to let them do a follow-up to this as well, but if inspectors had walked into that section the day of the explosion and found the conditions that existed in there, you know, the water spray's not working, the bit cutting in the sandstone, the combination of conditions, that mine would have been shut down without question. Unfortunately, at other times, there is this belief that the company was shutting down some of these sections when they had problems before we got there. So all things said, I think we could have done a better job at Upper Big Branch. I think we're up against a great challenge there as far as the inspections and the job of the inspectors.
You know, I think you said it all there. I agree with you that this would have been prevented had we been there at the time of the accident. But without us being there, the operator just did not choose to comply with the regulations, and we cannot control that when we're not on site.
I think, let me add one last thing. The accident investigation report identified several violations that caused that accident, or caused or contributed to that accident. And if you go through them, I mean, Joe and Bill just mentioned the ones on that working section, and we're confident if the inspectors would have observed those, they would have cited them and shut that section down and would have prevented the accident. Then you have another set of violations that our inspectors did not recognize. But those violations were not caused by MSHA or MSHA's inspectors. They were caused by Massey Energy. We didn't recognize the violations for a number of reasons, training, experience, leadership. But those are significant findings that we need to deal with. But as a head of the internal review team, I don't really see where we caused that explosion.
All right. Thanks, folks. That's all the time we've got. I appreciate everybody getting on the call. If you have any follow-ups this afternoon, please contact Amy. And thanks again.
Thank you for your participation on the call. You may now disconnect.